The Marketing Review.
With Cambridge Marketing Colleges. Visit marketingcollege.com to see our courses.
Hello and welcome to The Marketing Review with Cambridge Marketing Colleges. I'm Kiran Kapoor. And this week's show is all about brands and branding. I'm welcoming back to the show Alison Thomas, aka Kat, our resident PR and marketing guru.
Thank you.
Alison, you've been moonlighting with another radio station, I hear.
Well, I do occasionally get on the radio, yes, I do. I've had a relationship with a couple of radio stations quite often, shall we say. But of course, my favourite star.
Well, welcome back anyway.
Thank you.
You're going to talk about branding. So let's start with, what is a brand?
The brand is so important. We tend to forget in this busy world about the brand and where it really fits into stuff. So it might be quite nice for us to start with a definition. And I've got a definition from Philip Kotler, who is a great PR and marketing source, really. And according to him, he says it's a seller's promise to deliver a specific set of features, benefits and services. So really, it's about a promise to our audience or to our consumers or to our customers about delivering what we're going to do and deliver for them.
So tell me, why does a brand matter?
Well, ultimately, it's about supporting the reputation of an organisation or a company. It fits into the PR mix. It's the most visual element when you're talking about a company that a customer or an audience will actually think about. It's the logo, it's the name, but actually, really, what it's about when looking back at that definition, it's about the promise that a company makes to their customers.
So give me some examples of brands.
The big ones really are the ones that we think of instantly. We're thinking Coca-Cola, IBM, Google. The reason they matter is most importantly to do with the financial bottom line of a business. They're worth actually millions of, and some of them even billions of pounds on the financial bottom line. So they're important from the point of view of communicating instantly to our customer, but they're also important in adding value to the organisation.
Because there is a great quote that something like Ribena is actually, this, I've forgotten the exact figure, but something like a 36% markup on any other type of blackcurrant drink just because of the name Ribena.
Absolutely. There is an inherent value in that brand that actually adds bottom line to the business, but also helps us in terms of selling our products and services to our customers. Our customers are out there and it's almost like a signpost. You can trust Ribena in that instance that you've just mentioned there. You can trust Google when you're actually online to make sure that they're there, you know, you get your search. It's about making our life easier. It's about almost taking us through a journey of life and streamlining things. We know that we can trust that brand because we've had experience of it before.
How does the company create this brand?
Well, the first thing that we think about when we think about a brand is actually the visual element. But that's only one part of what a brand truly is. So if we're a company who is deciding to either rebrand or even a new startup who needs a brand, there are certain things that we need to think about. And only one of those is, in fact, the communications part of it. I like the Wally Ollins view of this. He's written an awful lot about branding. He's a published author in this respect, and he's respected in terms of his thought process. And he suggests that there are four vectors to a brand. There's that communications part that we used to seeing, the visual element that we're talking about there, but also the product, the environment, and the behaviour. So if we're going to create a brand, we need to think about four different elements, and one of which is the communications bit that we're familiar with, but there's three others as well.
Okay, so can we talk through those? So perhaps the product?
Yeah, well, starting with the product then, if we think about the product being what we're actually selling, so when we go back to our definition in terms of delivery of something, this is really what the customer will ultimately end up with, our product. And when we're talking about the style of product, the build of the product, the quality of the product, it all has something to say about the company. You only have to think about, let's say, the automobile industry, cars. They're great at making sure that a brand has inherent value over and above what the product is. But the product is where it all starts. We have confidence in getting in that car. We have confidence in the drive. But more importantly, it's about what it says about us. For example, I've got a friend who has a Mini. They're very much into the Mini, the classic Mini. Isn't it a wonderful, iconic brand? They have a community that they've actually created where they have enthusiast meetings and they have weekends and they go away. So yes, part of it was all about the product being nice, but also it's about what that experience is, what the product gives them over and above just the product itself. The brand adds the value in, and it's about what it says about them.
I see. So the product is essentially, it's a small car, it's easy to park, and it takes you from A to B. But the brand is the fact that it's the Mini, it was in the Italian job, it's got that sort of flair and style and excitement about it.
Classically British car, isn't it? But it's got some character, it's got some quirkiness, and that says anybody who owns one of those vehicles has almost got some of those brand values rubbing off on them. And it's about making sure that that is the bit that's communicated to those people when they're buying that product.
I see. And Mini, of course, play on this, don't they? I mean, years ago, they did Minis Have Feelings too, and there was actually Mini cars wrote Valentine's notes to each other and things printed them
in
the paper.
Absolutely. And so you can see where that brand of that, the product, we've got the product, we've then created character around that product, which then becomes a brand in its own right. And then you can see how that can translate into one of the other vectors, the communication. So you then start to communicate those brand values.
Okay, so you also talked about the environment of the brand.
Yeah, the environment is actually quite an interesting one because it's about where we actually experience that brand. So, for example, if you are in the retail or hospitality industry, that would be a customer experience. We only have to walk into, let's say, a supermarket and see that the decor, the layout, the quality of the products is very different depending on the supermarket name that you go into. If I said to you Lidl, for example, and I also said Waitrose, you could instantly feel that actually you would know straight away when you walked in there whether it was a Lidl store or a Waitrose store. Yes, you've got things like the signage, which takes us back to communications, but it's more than that. It's the feel, the ambiance, it could even be the smell. Think about restaurants and how they use that. A Michelin-star restaurant, for example, would have a very different environment where they're serving food to something like a McDonald's. You're not going to see, electronic self-service booths in, in a Michelin-star restaurant. It's all going to be served to you at the table. But the smell, the ambiance, and the whole way that it's actually delivered to you helps with delivering that brand promise.
And is there anything else about the environment that you should be thinking about?
Yes, it could be. It's absolutely everything. It's from the furnishings to the colour to the quality, the ambiance, the sounds, the smell. And then that really also leads into the other vector of behaviour and how the staff behave towards you, how they greet you when you come into the restaurant, whether they show you to a table or if you're in McDonald's, whether or not they help you with the booth that you're trying to select your burger from. So it's all about that sort of overall customer experience from walking in, the subliminal things that we take in, like the colour, the sound, the smell, and then that experience that we have with them in terms of behaviours. And that fourth vector is very important. That behavioural part is almost the most critical part of a brand, because that's the bit that we remember the most. We remember how we feel when we experienced a brand far more than how we felt when we saw it. So an example of that would be the hospitality industry and how you were treated in a hotel or indeed a restaurant. But absolutely every single business needs to think about this, because every single employee has a contribution to make to the brand in terms of how they deal with their customers. It doesn't matter what role you're playing, you impact on that brand. And what you want to do is make sure it's a positive impact and not a negative one.
So if I was creating a brand where actually I was sold in another environment, so maybe I'm a B2B and I'm being sold through a distributor, is it the distributor's people and environment that I should be worrying about, because that also reflects on my brand?
Absolutely. As soon as you get to, distribution outlets, you're going through a third party. So now what you need to make sure is that you have a really good brand fit. A good example of this is actually where a lot of big brand names, we mentioned some earlier, like Coca-Cola or maybe L'Oreal or, Pepsi, they actually often couple up with a celebrity to endorse their products. Now, there's a risk in that, both in terms of what you've said in terms of a trade, but also a consumer one where they're coupling up with a celebrity. Massive risk. There's benefits, of course, because what they really want to do is have the celebrity endorsement and actually reach a new audience, and that influence is enormous. So there's great things to be gained, But when it goes wrong, it can be catastrophic. And so that is an important relationship that you would want to make sure that you nurtured carefully. You made sure that you took control of from the very start. And if something was going wrong, that you would get out of very quickly too, in order to safeguard your brand.
Okay, so the last of your four vectors was communications, which is sort of where we started and logically is where we come back to, because I think that's the bit of branding that everyone expects.
Yes.
So is things like packaging and things, is that also part of the brand?
It's absolutely everything that you would see or touch about that brand. So it could be the name, the term, the packaging, signs, symbols, designs, slogans even. So it's that experience we have in a visual context that subliminally give us messages around it. You only have to think of, say, for example, Guinness, as in the drink. Instantly, I think of black and white. The product is black and white, yes, but everything they do in terms of their communications of that is also black and white. And they've carried that through all the way through to their advertising and their sales promotion and everything in terms of packaging as well.
So what happens if a company's finding that the brand is going bad? Can you change a brand around if you're starting to be perceived as perhaps not being such a good brand?
You can, but it takes time. If you think about what where we started the conversation around brands, about millions of pounds worth on the bottom line, that's a huge investment. And that's an investment that's been happening year on year, year on year. And it takes an awful lot of time to actually have a relationship with the consumer where they start to recognise your brand. If it starts to go negative, let's say, for example, Kate Moss, when she had some terrible situation there with drugs, she was dropped very quickly from all her sponsors, including L'Oreal, I think they were, and H&M. What they had to then do was some crisis management to make sure that it didn't impact on the brand. Now, to move forward from that situation, you've got to reinvest. You've got to start to build from the bottom up again. You've got to salvage what you can and move on with the good bits, leaving the bad bits behind. Distance yourself from the negativity as much as you can.
So how does this work for a digital brand? Because some digital brands seem to sort of spring up overnight. Has there actually been an awful lot more work going on behind the scenes than we see?
I would like to say yes, but I'm not quite sure people do really think of it in that way, to be honest with you, Kieran. I think most, you know, I'm not saying most, but a lot of setups would just think about a logo, putting a logo out there and that's it. When we're looking at creating a brand, we need to do some research. We need to think again, back to our audience, who we're talking to, how does it make them feel? Does it convey the messages that we want to convey to them? So when we're thinking about our most visual part of it, the logo, does it say something good about the brand? Does it convey all the different brand messages and all the values that we're trying to inherently get within that brand instantly inside that few seconds that you're talking to them? So I think a lot of people maybe just pick a brand, it looks good, it looks nice colour, without thinking about the other four vectors behind. The other thing you need to think about is how it can actually translate across the various different pieces of communication at all as well, because it may look great in one context, online, for example, you mentioned there, but does it also look great on your packaging? Does it look great on your brochures? Does it look great even on your email? And then how will it actually expand into a whole campaign, an advertising campaign? And can you actually get something a little bit more in terms of the brand out of it as far as your advertising is concerned and extend it into, say, for example, a strap line that is instantly recognisable? Good example of this would be Simples. Mm-hmm. I only have to say that and instantly you know that brand. Finger licking good, great slogan again, instantly you can think of that it's KFC. So that is the power of brand extension. You also can think of it in terms of a sonic brand, especially when you're using advertising. Oh dear, I don't really want to hum, but I'm going to have a go. If I was to go, da-nan. Yeah. You know that that little jingle fits with that name. And there's plenty of examples of that, far better than I can recount here today. But it's all about making sure that when you have something that is instantly recognisable, it has those, instantly communicates those brand values, and it's going to be something that your customers ultimately can have some confidence in, that they can buy that product and know what they're getting.
Alison Thomas of cat.uk.com, thank you very much indeed for that.
Thank you very much, Kieran.
The Marketing Review from Star Radio.